supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
In part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb. It's a tough question that will change your life forever. Children or no children, and if children, how many? Sometimes the decision is made for us, an unexpected pregnancy, a partner who has children from a previous relationship. But often couples and singles find themselves struggling to navigate these issues. On today's show, we'll talk about family size, how we think about it, how we decide, and what it means to our lives and happiness. My guests are Susan Newman and Michelle Jackson. Susan Newman is a psychologist and author who blogs for Psychology Today magazine. She's written The Case for the Only Child, The Essential Guide, which comes out in June. Susan, welcome to the show. Okay, I don't hear Susan just yet, but we do have Michelle Jackson in the studio. She is a clinical social worker, so I know you're there. And she's a staff therapist for Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. Michelle, welcome to Voices in the Family.
Thank you.
And of course, if you want to join the conversation, we really would love to hear from you, how you made decision. Okay, we have Susan on the phone now. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Mike, and good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And if you want to join the conversation, please give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Tell us how you navigated this decision. And Susan, I want to say one thing before we start talking. Even though your book is about only children, you're not pro-only child or only about only children, right?
That is correct. Actually, I have a sibling. And I also have four stepchildren from a first marriage. So I think I'm pretty objective about this.
Great.
I do have an only child at this point.
Got you. So we just wanted to put that out there before we get talking. And Susan, let me ask you, when do we typically start thinking about family size and whether we want children?
Well, that's changing greatly now. People are waiting much longer and having their babies later, and by later I mean after age 35 and upward. So while it used to be at 21, 22, we would think about it, the median age now in this country for having a first baby is 27, but people, you know, that's the dead middle. And in Spain, it's almost 29 years old. So this trend toward having your starting your families much later is not just in this country, but it's throughout Europe, it's in India, Portugal, Spain, Germany, Russia, France. The only country that seems to be having a lot of children or more than one or two children is Sweden.
And Michelle, do you think as we go along, go through adolescence, do we have a sense on this issue, whether we want kids at some point in life?
I think a lot of people do have a sense of whether they...
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't think, Michelle, your mic was open. Now it is.
Okay.
There we go.
Am I here?
Yes.
People certainly begin to have a sense based on their own experience of what they might like, what they might like to do differently, what they might like to have be the same. A lot of people really begin to formulate those ideas as they look ahead to what their definition of adulthood means. For example, when I'm an adult, I will have two kids. When I'm an adult, I will be a mother of three kids, etc. So definitely those things are starting to percolate in adolescence.
And how much do you think our family of origin, how much does that shape our desire to have kids and how we envision our family as we grow up?
It has a huge impact. If you think about your family of origin, it's your first understanding of what normal is. So I'm thinking of one couple in particular who each came from a family of four children with the children about 2 years apart. So when they were after they had had their first child and were thinking about a second child, as it got to be about 3 years after the first child, they felt like, whoa, you know, it's getting to be past the time when we would feel comfortable adding more children. And a decision for that couple was based on economics. They could either afford to have another child or send one of the parents on to graduate school. So they made the decision to send one of the parents on to graduate school. So that was very, very much an imprint of the family of origin.
And we'll talk more about how we make the decisions and some of the deciding factors. But Susan, do you want to weigh in on the family of origin and how that shapes our desire for our own family?
It's hugely important. People who you, and where the conflict comes in is if your partner comes from a different size family. Or it's sometimes it's also a gender issue. Men want boys and women want female children as their first. And so this becomes an area of contention. But the number of children you had in your family, your nuclear family growing up, and how well you got along or didn't get along, and also how well you relate to your siblings now, affects how you want to have your own family. For example, some of the people I talked to in doing the research for this book talked about being in the middle of 4, 5, 7, even a couple of them 11 children. And if, as a child, you had too much responsibility for your younger siblings, you definitely are not going to want to repeat that large family pattern. It's weighs too heavily on you. You felt you didn't get enough time and input from your parents, so you will choose a much smaller family.
So it doesn't just matter what kind of family we had, how many kids there were, but also whether we were happy in that family or not.
Exactly. How much attention did we get from our parents? How much of their resources were filtered down to you will affect you. And also there's the issue of favoritism and perceived favoritism and how that played out in your family, which will also influence your decision.
We're talking about family size today and how we get to make those decisions. And our number is 1-888-477-9499. If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Now, Michelle, do you think this topic has a different significance for women since we are also tied to our biological clock in some way? So at some point in our lives, we kind of have to make a decision.
Yes. It also, well, first off, for the biological clock, I mean, there gets to be a point where if a relationship is such that it doesn't look like it's going to be a healthy one for raising children, then if the female wants to have children, she has the option at that point to look seriously about the viability of that relationship and whether to continue, maybe to look at finding another partner, look at perhaps thinking about having a baby on her own. So it definitely influences options.
And Susan, I could imagine that could create a lot of stress in a relationship too, if the woman is at a point in her life where she kind of has to make that decision now.
Oh, interestingly, people have walked out of relationships and marriages based solely on one of the partners not wanting children. And many of them, the number of women having babies without a partner and using a sperm donor has gone way up. In fact, 41% of newborns are to mothers who are not married right now. And that doesn't include it includes teenagers, but a bulk of them are over 35. They're worried about their biological clock, and they just say, okay, I want a baby. I want to be a mom. And nothing's going to stop them. That biological drive is pretty strong for a lot of women. So they just go online, look at sperm donor profiles, and proceed. And often it's with the hope that Mr. Wright will come along, but he's not there now, and she just doesn't want to wait any longer.
Yeah, and we definitely want to hear also from single people with children out there. So please give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Michelle, when should couples bring up the issue of children? I mean, if you're dating and you feel like things are going somewhere, it could be one of the situations where you bring that up and eek, it kind of is too much too soon. So when should you start on that conversation?
When it comes up. So for some people, it comes up in the first dinner date. For some people, it comes up just when they've decided that they really want to be a couple and think about living their lives together. I mean, it's important that it be part of the whole mix of future planning. And for some people, it's a very intentional decision not to have children. For some people, I also just want to, you know, raise the point that there are couples that can't have children.
Oh, naturally. Absolutely. We'll get to that.
Infertile couples, gay and lesbian couples. And so if that's something that they really want to focus their energy as a couple on making happen, it's going to take more time, more effort, more planning, more preparation. So they're going to likely want to be talking about that sooner rather than later.
Susan, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I think women who are, older, meaning in their mid to late 30s, are going to bring it up sooner in a dating situation. And some women are pretty sure about the number of children they want. And that can become a fairly contentious issue. One woman just said, I have to stop dating you because you don't want children and I want a child. But then, of course, she fell in love with him, so that was a real problem. And they did get married, and they compromised on having one child. But, as women age, the whole issue of how many children, when do we start, comes up fairly early if you are older.
Got you. And you just brought up the issue of compromise. In preparation for the show, I spoke to some moms in my neighborhood, and I would like to hear one of these conversations because that topic comes up in there. So let's hear it.
I'm Jen McGowan, and my daughter is 2, and we always knew we wanted kids. I think the number kind of has changed since we've had a child, and now we're still working things through.
What was the number you had in mind as you were thinking about, you know, your family?
3 or 4.
How come?
I think we both come from relatively small families. I come from a family of 2, and my husband comes, he's an only child. So we always thought, oh, bigger means better. And then we had our daughter. And we're adjusting to those changes and just kind of taking things as they come now.
So have you talked about what's next for you guys since you've had your daughter?
Yeah, we've been talking all along. My husband keeps saying he's not getting any younger. So he's kind of insistent that we have more kids, and I'm still kind of taking things as they come.
Are you considering maybe just having one child?
I am, but my husband is more in the camp that bigger still means better. And we're just kind of talking things through, and as we do in marriage, we compromise and just kind of taking things as they come. And if more kids come, that's part of the plan, and if not, one is fine too.
So, Michelle, how do you keep that conversation going? So right now, this mom is happy with one child. Husband definitely wants more kids. Where do you go from there?
You keep talking and deciding together what's really workable and doable. If the number supersedes what's really possible for, in terms of what the relationship can actually hold and support, then it's worth talking about that because there's going to be a real exchange. Okay, so you have 2 kids. Does that mean the relationship really starts to suffer and there's strain? Are there other ways to involve children, maybe without having a second child, maybe a foster child or an adoptive child later on down the road? Raising kids is hard work, and it's really tempting to get fixated on a number and a model of what the family looks like and forget to take the time to respond to what actually is.
And Susan, do you feel that couples can reach a good compromise, or is one partner always going to feel, well, I gave up X, be it having no children, having more children?
Well, the first year often influences both the husband and the wife or both partners. If you have a really difficult child during that first year, that magic number, as your guests said, three or four we were thinking about. We wanted a larger family. But that gets weighed in this equation, and that number of three or four or two may change. And children do strain a marriage and a relationship. One of the things I found fascinating was that you would think when couples are talking about having another child, they wouldn't get into the stress and strain on their relationship, but that comes up because children, you would think couples argue about money, but it turns out that more than 40% of the arguments are about the children and different aspects of their children's lives. So that gets weighed in as well in this decision. It's more complicated than just the family we came from or what we think is the ideal family. You have the biological clock issues, you have money issues. There's just a lot to consider in this conversation to get to a compromise. And, it's women working, it goes back and forth. And so you do need to keep the conversation going. And at some point, it will reach a conclusion that usually will make both partners happy.
We're talking about family size. Today, we're going to take a short break. My guests are Susan Newman and Michelle Jackson. Susan is a psychologist and author who blogs for Psychology Today magazine, and she's written The Case for the Only Child, The Essential Guide, which comes out in June. And Michelle Jackson is a staff therapist for the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. I'm Mike and Scott in for Dan Gottlieb today, and you're listening to Voices in the Family.
Abington Health supports WHYY and announces the opening of its new Orthopedic and Spine Institute, located at both Abington Memorial Hospital and Lansdale Hospital. Offering minimally invasive procedures for joint and spine performed by board-certified surgeons. To access their online pain assessment and to learn if a specialist could help, abingtonhealth.org/bone or 215-481-BONE. That's abingtonhealth.org/bone or 215-481-BONE.
Temple University Libraries supports WHYY and celebrates National Library Week. On April 14th at 5:30 p.m., Daly Library at Temple presents Iowa Writers' Workshop grad Tom McAllister and famed sports writer Ray Dittinger. McAllister will read from his new book, Bury Me in My Jersey, which explores his dedication to the Philadelphia Eagles and the death of his father. Then he and Dittinger will discuss sports, writing, and of course, the Eagles. More information at library.temple.edu.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb today. We're talking about family size. My guests are Susan Newman and Michelle Jackson. Susan Newman is a psychologist and author. She has written The Case for the Only Child, The Essential Guide, which comes out in June. And Michelle Jackson is a clinical social worker and staff therapist for the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. And let's listen to, I spoke before the show with a couple of moms who all had different family sizes. So let's hear from another one of those moms.
My name's Lori Arnold, and I have a daughter who's 4 years old.
When did you and your husband start talking about kids, no kids?
Probably when I was about 35. I'm 43 now. And we talked about it as a hypothetical situation for a very long time. We both agreed that we never wanted children, but as we got older, we thought it would be nice to have some. One. We didn't know.
And then you had your daughter?
And then we had my daughter. And the pregnancy was really difficult for me. And once she was here, we had no way anticipated how it would change our lives. People kept asking us as time went on, when will you have the other? And we both kind of looked at each other and realized we got what we wanted. And we're not going to push our luck. And oh my God, we could never live through those first 3 months ever again.
Are you glad that you and your husband see eye to eye on the issue?
Yes, because it would be oppressive. It's kind of a suffocating idea if he wanted more. And I can't do that journey again.
How about your daughter? Does she ask you about siblings?
Yes. And we've had the conversation twice. I grew up in a big family, and I'm very, very close to one sibling, that my sister, who's only 18 months younger than me. And that relationship is like none other. My daughter won't have that. And yeah, I've worried. I've worried, you know, we've both been concerned that she doesn't develop single child habits. But I just don't go there.
So Susan, before we start talking about only children and some of the issues that you've done work on, here in this case, Lori, the decision was kind of made for her because of health reasons, and that happens a lot.
That happens very frequently. But I want to say one thing to Lori that's really important about her daughter asking for siblings. Many only children ask for siblings, but they stop around age 8 when they realize how good they have it, that they have their parents all to themselves. They're not being dethroned in any way. And to the other point she raised about worrying about her not having the experience of having a sibling and growing up with one. Lori's in a large family. She has her cousins. She will have lots of cousins to build and friends to build sibling-like relationships with. And that's what families are doing who have one child. They are trying to ensure that their child has close friends and long-term friends who can be there for them as a sibling would be.
And what are some of the stereotypes our society continues to hold about only children?
Oh, that they're spoiled, that they're lonely, they're selfish, they're bossy, they're shy, they're dependent, they have more imaginary friends than other children. And, you know, those are the primary ones. And, you know, there have been hundreds of studies done over the last 20, 30 years, including a lot of them in China, where there's been a one-child policy in effect for 31 years. So that provided fertile research ground, but studies have also been done around the world with only children. And none of these traits or myths hold up when they're scrutinized. This whole concept of the only child being damaged in some way started in 1896 when a psychologist did a study. And that was a period when children were isolated and lived far apart and didn't have the technology that we have today. You know, today children are socialized very early in daycare and pre-K and kindergarten. You know, plus they have, as they get older, the computer and sports. So, you know, the only child is not, you know, as many people believe, sitting home alone, feeling miserable and unloved and clinging to his or her parents.
And Michelle Jackson, another thing that Lori mentioned to me in the conversation, we didn't hear that part on the air, is that she gets a lot of pressure from other people who say, what, you're not having another child? When are you having another child? So what are some of the pressures couples face when they want just one child, or maybe when there is a health issue or the child has a health issue?
Pressure from other people who assume that they will have more than one child, perhaps expectations from their parents or family that they're going to deliver more grandchildren, the famous more grandchildren line. Sometimes there are financial issues, too, that make it really complicated to think about having another child, and that's not something that most people would be comfortable talking about publicly. So when someone in a supermarket assumes that this is baby number one and baby number two and baby number three are on the way, it makes for an awkward conversation sometimes.
Susan, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I do. Family, mothers, mother-in-laws, father-in-laws are often the worst defenders, but there are, you know, just strangers who come up to you and you know, say, when are you having another? That is the most often asked question. And, of course, it evokes guilt for the mother of one child. And the best thing to do in those situations is, if it's a medical issue, say, I can't have more children, or if you don't want to discuss that, simply say to the person, I'm not asking you about your personal life, why are you asking me? And that often tells people in a somewhat nice way that this is an area you're not going to go into and they have no business asking you. So that kind of helps for the mother who feels guilty or is, you know, as you get older, it's that question gets very tiresome.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, did you want to weigh in on this?
If the mother or the parents are at peace with the fact that they're having one child, then it changes the whole dynamic of these conversations. The guilt dials down, the feeling that you have to give an answer that satisfies a stranger who's someone that you may never see ever again. So I would actually add, too, that it's important for the family to get to a place where they're comfortable with the number of kids they have, so they're not feeling shame, they're not feeling guilt, they're able to say, we really love the child we have. End of topic.
And this works for us.
Yes.
And we have a phone caller at 1-888-477-9499. Broderick, are you there?
Yep, this is me.
Hello, welcome to Voices in the Family. What's your comment?
I just wanted to say, just put my input as far as having children. I have four kids. My last kid was born January 23rd of 2011.
And, congratulations.
And I'm only 29 years old. And we started very young, at a very young age. And it's really just pretty much saying it was really no influences or anything like that. I've been with my wife for 12 years and very happy.
And did you, looking back, did you have any idea how much having kids would change your life?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it changed for the best because at one point in my life, it was really hectic. I mean, going through a lot with school and everything like that and peer pressure with everything else. I think it made me a better person. I mean, it made me grow up faster. But I think, I mean, it's just another story, another path to tell my kids. And right now, I mean, I'm pretty much taking care of the whole family.
Great. Thank you so much for your call, Broderick. I'm going to pull you down just because there's a little bit of traffic noise in the background. Susan, any comments on what we just heard from our caller?
I like that he said it made me a better person. Children do that, but you know, you also have to understand that having one child or two children will do that. You're just as much a parent if you have one child or four children.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can become a better person, as Broderick said, via your children
and
or child.
Michelle, any comments on what we just heard?
More power to him.
And right. I think I wanted to get to something, you know, that Lori brought up in her conversation when she said, you know, she had her daughter and then the first 3 months were really terrible and she had no idea how much this would impact her life. And I think when we talk about children, we have to talk about the issue of expectations versus the actual outcome, because we hinge a lot on the issue of children in terms of how we perceive our lives and what we think will make us happy. And we're not always right about that, Michelle.
Absolutely. There's the reality of parenting. There's the reality of the child that you have. When most people are talking about the number of children they are assuming that they would like to have in their family, they're assuming normal, healthy children. I mean, if the first child is a special needs child, it really shifts the conversation in terms of people's financial resources, their emotional resources, really what's possible for them, you know, if they have significant health care costs that they hadn't anticipated, et cetera. Also, the role of being a new mom can be very different than people expect. I mean, postpartum depression is a real issue. There are things that there are real things that happen in the process of having a family and making this decision in real time about continuing that couples can't anticipate when they're talking about it in the abstract.
Susan, do you want to weigh in on this issue?
I think parents, before they have children, have no concept of the amount of time, energy, and stress that's involved with raising a child. If you have a colicky baby, I mean, that is like someone's throwing you in a cold shower every 20 minutes and every night. They don't see it. And also, there is the stress of, as Michelle said, having special needs and the doctor's visits. And if something was wrong at birth, your parents don't want to go back or can't afford to go back and relive that. They're afraid of it. If you've gone through a terrible postpartum depression and your anxiety levels are soaring, that's very scary to a mother, and that will also influence whether or not she has more children.
There's a psychologist at Harvard, Dan Gilbert, who's written a lot about the issue of happiness, and he says that we're really lousy at predicting what will make us happy and what will make us unhappy, but yet we try to constantly predict how we will be happy tomorrow. Is that true for the issue of family size? We really don't have a clue if it will make us happy or not?
Well, what Dan Gilbert says, that one of my favorite lines from him is, you're most happy when the last child leaves home. That was his conclusion. But we fantasize about how our children will get along, how happy we will be, how they will pitch in and take care of us when we're older, how well they're going to get along and they're going to be best friends. I mean, these are all happiness-related facets that we think about, and that's what we're sure we're going to have, but that doesn't always happen.
And Michelle, also looking back, we often think, well, that was such a happy time because maybe we're remembering only the happiest moments.
Sure. There's some literary character whose name I'm forgetting who has a phrase that says the past always looks better than it was. There's, 3 o'clock feedings and chicken pox and vomit and the sort of realities of babies, which, you know, are all part of the wonderful contribution they add to a family. But I was thinking about your point about expectations versus outcome and really dealing with what's happening as it's unfolding is the opportunity to sort of reconcile those two things, because expectations are our hopes and outcomes are real things. And so when you look at outcome, that's a time when you can say, okay, this is what we expected. Here's what we're living with. How do we want to make adjustments and changes to acknowledge what's real for us?
Let's take another phone call at 1-888-477-9499. And also, we would love to hear from some people who made a decision not to have children and also hear from more dads. Right now, we have Laura on the phone. Hi, Laura. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi. Thank you.
What was your comment today?
Well, first of all, I really do appreciate everything that you're saying about the complexity of the decision to have children. And certainly, you know, I have 2 kids and my husband has 3, so we've been through the full catastrophe, as you say. But I wanted to speak about the blessing of having siblings, especially as one's parents get older. I have 3 siblings. My husband has 4. And as our parents have aged, it's just been amazing to have each other's support. And when my father passed away, to have my siblings there, I don't think I could have gotten through it without it. And then also, when I went through my own divorce, my 2 sons, you know, were able to support each other through it, and they're really each other's best friends. So I just wanted to speak up for the sort of the other side of the picture.
That's, you make a good point, and I, Michelle, any reaction?
Well, it brings to mind the conversation of one couple who felt very ambivalent about having children to begin with because of their sense of the world and population and their politics. But once they decided to have one, they felt that they had an obligation to have two, because if anything happened to one of the children, they would have the other child to help them go forward. And similarly, if anything had happened to the parents, the children would have each other.
And also something the caller brought up, Laura, is the issue of blended families. A lot of times we find somebody who already has kids, or we might be on a second relationship. So, and that's your experience, right, Susan?
I'm sorry. I want to go back to one point about the obligation the couple had to have two. A lot of people feel that way, that if something happens to their child, they'll have another child. But that's like buying a backup system. You really don't want to have children because you're afraid something will happen to one of the children, because statistically that's, you know, something we worry about that doesn't happen as often as people think. So I wanted to make that point. I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, I just wanted to get to the experience of being a blended family. Sometimes it's not a decision we make. We meet somebody who already has children, or there are children from a previous relationship on our end. So and that was your experience, correct?
Right. I was one of those who fell in love with a man with four children and full custody of them. So, yeah, that often happens. And in those relationships, that's when a couple, Laura is an exception, she had two children, but often in a second marriage like that, when you're blending families, the husband's older and will agree to have one child. And then there's the cost factor, which is something we haven't discussed, because he may have children to support from a previous marriage. You know, that's when the finances of raising children can become an issue as well.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We're talking about family size today, and my guests are Susan Newman and Michelle Jackson. Susan Newman is a psychologist, and she's written The Case for the Only Child, The Essential Guide, which comes out in June. And Michelle Jackson is a staff therapist for the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. If you want to join the conversations, there's still time at 1-888-477-9499. You're listening to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb.
Supporting WHYY, PEN Program for Mindfulness will feature a meditation weekend on May 21st to explore how mindfulness and meditation are powerful tools for healing, growth, and stress management. Events will include a professional conference on mindfulness and psychotherapy and an evening lecture and full-day workshop with Tara Brock, psychotherapist and best-selling author of Radical Acceptance. For more information about these or other programs beginning in May, online at pennmedicine.org/mindfulness or 215-615-2775. The Drexel University School of Public Health supports WHYY and hosts an information session Tuesday, April 12th at 6 p.m. It's an opportunity to learn more about the Master of Public Health degree and meet Drexel students and staff. Drexel has the only fully accredited School of Public Health in Greater Philadelphia and stresses real-world experience. For information, 1-800-2-DREXEL or publichealth.drexel.edu.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Dan Gottlieb today. We're talking about family size. My guests are Susan Newman and Michelle Jackson. Susan has written The Case for the Only Child, The Essential Guide, which comes out in June, and Michelle Jackson is a staff therapist for the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. And before the show, I spoke to some moms in my neighborhood. Let's hear from another one of those moms.
My name is Jackie Rick. I have two daughters. Sophia is age 4. And Charlotte just turned 1.
And when did you first start talking about having children at all with your husband?
My husband is a little bit older than me, and he actually suggested that we have a baby before we get married, but I ruled that out completely. But I guess that got the conversation going, so it was right away.
When you talked about children, did you talk about that you were going to have more than one?
We did. It was always clear that we were going to have more than one. I think we both liked the idea of having a really fun house with lots of activity and lots going on and noise and, you know, energy. And so we talked about having 2 or 3.
now you have two. What's are you still talking about having a third one?
Well, we talk about it, but my husband tells me every single day that we're not having a third one. He says that he's too old and too tired, and we have a great family the way it is, and he'd like to just keep things the way they are.
When you think about not having any more children, is there a certain sadness attached to that, or what is the emotion that comes up when you think about that?
I feel sadness when I hold my one-year-old and think that this is the last time I'm going to be holding a baby, you know, that I'm going to be going through the first time that she crawls and the first time, you know, that she gets her new teeth and all of those things, nursing, all of those small milestones along the first couple years. I feel sad when I think about not doing that again.
And now what Jackie has done with her husband is she basically said, let's put this decision on hold for a year until the baby is two, and then we'll talk again. So she's not hopeful that her husband will change his mind, but at least she kind of feels she has that buffer zone now. Is that a good idea, Michelle? Is it good to just say, we need to keep talking, but maybe not right now?
Absolutely. A child is a pretty permanent decision. And so giving yourself some more time to warm up to the idea of what it would mean to go forward or what it would mean to stop is really crucial.
We have another caller on the air. Let's get Henry in on the conversation. Henry, hello. You're on Voices in the Family.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. What's your comment today?
I was just wanted to listen to the show. And I'm a single parent of three children. And when we first got married, my ex-wife and I, you know, we didn't really plan on being divorced. And then, you know, you find yourself in this situation of there'd be a point where all three of them would be in high school at the same time. And that's going to be a struggle for myself to pay that, let alone their college education and stuff. And I think that, not that I would trade any of them in, but, you know, it makes it very difficult when you have just one income. You know what I mean?
You bring up a really good point, Henry. Thank you so much for calling. And Susan, you brought up the issue of finances beforehand. How big an issue is that for people?
It's a big issue for people because, according to the Department of Agriculture, it's costing, if you're in a middle-income bracket, $286,000 just to raise your child to age 18. That's before college. And of that number, this is my favorite number, $46,000 of that $286,000 is for food.
Oh.
And, of course, the biggest chunk is for housing. So, you know, as your family increases, you have to consider, will you need more space? You know, how many bedrooms? Do you have enough bedrooms? Even if you pile, you know, all the girls in one room and all the boys in another, you still may need more space. So money is something, particularly in this economy, that parents are absolutely thinking about as they decide what is the best family size for them. Because then on top of that, you have college costs, which are escalating at huge percentages. What you may have gone to college for 4 years for, if you have a four-year-old, let's say, in 14 years when she goes off to college, that's going to pay for 1 year. So, money is definitely an issue, and, you know, who's working? Are both parents working or one parent working? Today there are more women working than ever before, and many, many families, you know, women aren't working because they, you know, it's fun. They're working because the family needs the income.
And the cost of childcare is astronomical, I can attest to that.
Yes.
And Michelle, you wanted to comment as well.
Well, this is also another really important topic that we see discussed as women are having children older. So if you're having your first child in your late 30s to early 40s, it's a really different to think about what it would be like to pay several hundred thousand dollars or few hundred thousand dollars for college when you're in your 60s, when you've been saving for retirement. Perhaps that's there's your retirement money allocated to college expenses. So, and that's with today's dollars. That's not with dollars in 20 years from now.
Let's get another call in. We have Lynn on the phone. Lynn, hello. You're on Voices in the Family. Lynn, are you still there?
Is she Wayne? Yeah. I wanted to tell you, hello.
Yes, you're there.
I wanted to tell you about my brother, who was a role model for me. He and his wife had 7 children. My husband and I saw them go through a difficult time financially, lots of emotional ups and downs with 7 kids, squabbling, crowded into small spaces, wonderful children, a lot of fun, and we just always enjoyed being in their company. My husband and I waited 10 years without any children of our own, and finally adopted 2 because we knew we wanted a family, and that we thought it would make our marriage more complete, more fulfilling, more fun, and it did.
Thank you.
I just really believe that this complex situation is a no one size fits all.
All right. Thank you. You know what? I'm sorry, we're going to have to take you down. I really apologize because we have a terrible connection, but I want to thank you for your call, and you bring up a great issue that, you know, a lot of couples, it's not a decision that they can easily make because there might be a medical issue or they might not be able to have children. So, Michelle, how does that figure? What do you hear about that in your practice?
Well, the question becomes, in addition to how many children will we have, it's also how will we have those children? Will we have them through adoption? If they're an infertile couple, will we have them through IVF and all of the processes and procedures and expensive medical costs that go along with that? I mentioned earlier couples who can't have biological children, lesbian and gay couples are looking at sperm donors, friend donors, their medical costs related to that. So every additional layer of added effort that goes into deciding how many children you're going to have, it extends the conversation, it extends the effort, and people need to be that much more committed to what they want.
And do people seek out kindred spirits, other people who've been through the experience to help them make that decision?
Absolutely. On the internet, there are all kinds of discussion groups. There are people who make referrals to one another about specialists, about donor sites that they liked. People are really doing a lot to help support each other in all of these communities. I'm thinking of one couple in particular who's really struggling with infertility, and they're at a point where the financial steps of the next phase may, in fact, be prohibitive for them.
Yes. And Susan, do you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I do. For example, there are adoption groups from specific countries. So if you adopted from Ethiopia, there is a group that just has of parents who just adopted from that country, and then similar for other countries. There is a group called Single Mothers by Choice, which is national, and there it's all, it's women who decided either to adopt or use a sperm donor, but without a partner. So there is support for everybody out there, and it's very easy to find. On the adoption end, I wanted to add one other thing. People, often say when you have one child, oh, we'll just go adopt another. Adoption can be, and often is, as emotionally traumatic and draining and costly as any different forms of in vitro technology and the disappointments with miscarriages and the depression from drugs that you have to take. Mm-hmm. So, adoption, while people believe that that is the solution to having a larger family, it isn't always the case, because countries close down, they change their rules, women have to be, and couples have to be a certain age, there's a body weight limit in China. So, while you say this is a solution, it isn't always a solution.
Yeah. And one thing, we only have a little bit of time left here, and one thing I wanted to talk about is, Michelle, you said earlier being at peace with the decision you make. And I guess one of the reasons why this decision feels so big is because we'll never know whether we'll be happier with kids or without. Whatever decision we make, we don't know who or what we would have been on the other side of that decision. So how do you get to be at peace with whatever decision you made?
Well, for some people it's harder than for others. And also, it may not be a decision that you made. It may be a decision that's made for you because of, you know, we've touched on health reasons, economic reasons, et cetera. But really being present in your life as it is now, realizing what you have that's rich in it, and having it be a disappointment. It will be a disappointment if you're not able to have kids and you want them. Maybe exploring other ways to have children in your life, but really working to appreciate and live in the life you have rather than pining for the life you want.
And Susan, we just have a moment left, but do you want to weigh in on that, how you get to be at peace?
Yeah, I would say that people have to realize the definition of family has changed, and whatever decision you make, there are so many different kinds of families. And the other point I would make is that you look forward and not back, and don't feel guilty. Just have fun with the family you have and don't think about what you might have had.
Thank you. That's a great point to end on. And with that, we're going to have to close. My guests today have been Susan Newman and Michelle Jackson. Susan is a psychologist and author. Her latest book, The Case for the Only Child, The Essential Guide, comes out in June, but she has had many, she has raised several children, and so she's not only about only children. Michelle Jackson is a clinical social worker and a staff therapist for the Council for Relationships here in Philadelphia. Next week on Voices in the Family, we'll talk about interfaith families. We'll hear from NPR's Cokie Roberts. She and her husband discuss their two faiths in their new book that details their Passover traditions. If you have a question, show idea, or comment, please email us at voices@whyy.org. You can listen to archive editions of the show on our website at whyy.org/voices. The engineer for today's show has been Bob Alls. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content at WHYY. Our producer is Jennifer Lynn. Emily Hawes is our intern. I'm Mike and Scott, executive producer of Voices in the Family. Dan will be back next week. Thank you so much for listening.